Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello everyone, this is The Ruck from The Times and The Sunday Times. You join us in our Brisbane studios, and it's a few hours now after we've learned the England team for the second test, and we're still a bit confused, aren't we, Alex? Alex is with me here. Hello. Rugby correspondent of The Times.
Yeah, I mean, we are a bit, because on the one hand, I really understand a couple of those picks in the context of really what happened in the first test. The selection of Tommy Freeman and Guy Porter makes a lot of sense. They've come in for Joe Cockensinger and Joe Marchant, who both drop out of the 23 completely. And they're after some punch. They're after someone to get them over the gain line in that back line. And Cockensinger didn't deliver that last week. He was really quiet. Didn't really come looking for the work that they wanted him to do. And talking to Eddie Jones, that's exactly what he expects from Porter and from Freeman, and it's what we've seen in the Premiership. You know, Porter is an abrasive, tough midfielder who's not afraid of getting stuck in, and they're going to look at him to try and get a bit of momentum into their attacking game, which was missing in Perth. And Freeman is a player who will come off his wing a bit like Jack Nowell and try and make things happen. So I understand those selections. But then you've also got the fact that they're both making their debut. Jack Van Portfleet is going to make his first start at scrum half, and he is a player who is very highly regarded by Eddie Jones. That is a pick for the World Cup. But what's sort of confusing things for us over here is that the whole tone of this team announcement for the pivotal deciding game, really, in this test series, if England lose, the series is gone. If England win, goes to a decider in Sydney. The whole tone of it was, this is about building for the World Cup. This is a practice for the World Cup, Eddie talked of it as. An opportunity to experience some knockout rugby, effectively.
And he said, we're thinking about the future as well.
This is a team for the future. Another incarnation of the team for the future. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of hard to square that circle, because on the one hand, I get the selections as probably the right thing to do this week, to win this week. And yet the vibe coming out of England was very much, it's not really about this week. It's about next year. In a week when I sort of expected them to come in kind of chest beating, like backs against the wall. You know, we're gonna fight back. We're going to go out and get them. It really wasn't that kind of tone at all. And I find that language quite odd in a week when you'd imagine they'd be coming out fighting. And you got some stats, Will, didn't you, about just to underline the sort of inexperience of this team, but also the sort of spinning wheel of selection that we've experienced with Eddie, and that we all know the players who have come in and gone. And Max Malins now seems to be out of the picture completely, a Ben Earl out of the picture completely. What did you find out when you went digging?
So, yeah, the news from the men that know the stats are that this is the third youngest backline that Eddie Jones has picked as England head coach. And the previous two were against the United States and Canada. So essentially, in against a top international side, he's never gone younger in the back line. And that is because he's gone for... he's got Freddie Stewart at fullback, who's 21. He's got Van Portfleet, who's also 21. He's got Guy Porter, who's 25. He's got Noel and Farrell, who are the older guys, at 29 and 30. And Marcus Smith at 23. And so those stats came from Simon Gleave, who's at Nielsen Grace Note, the head of sports analysis over there. So he's helped us with that. But that's one thing. And then the other one, on the sort of selection merry-go-round surrounding Marcus Smith, really. Alex, one of your friends actually pointed us towards this, and we looked it up. Just the number of different combinations that Smith's had to play with. And we looked it up, and he's played with four different starting scrum halves, eight different pairs of centres, nine different pairs of wings, and two fullbacks. So actually the fullbacks, pretty much Freddie Stewart, and then once was George Furbank. And he's only in his 11th test on Saturday. And you just think, trying to develop a new style and a new 10 and new partnerships, and admittedly he hasn't had Farrell fit, which is what he wanted to have played all the time. It just looks incredibly inconsistent. For us, it feels incoherent at times. And I think, as you were saying, the whole tenor of this team announcement, we expected it to be, it's World Cup final time, it's the most experienced team I could pick, this is the team to win the series back for us, get it to 1-1. And we didn't get that. We got a really young team. We got roll-the-dice selections. We got guys who've never been seen before. And to us, we're sort of going into the team events and thinking, how's he going to play this? And it really wasn't what we expected.
And it's extra confusing because we sat through a lot of explanations and press conferences with limited detail, but lots of talk about how England want to evolve their attack, and it needs, it's very complicated what they're trying to do, and it needs cohesion and understanding between players for it to work. And yet, with all of those changes, you're never going to get any of that cohesion and understanding. And you know, Smith and Farrell, they played under two games together, like 68 minutes and then 80 minutes. So that is a fledgling partnership, and they both have different perspectives on how they want to play the game, and they're working on sort of forging a sort of a common ground, if you like, and that's one of the ways that England are trying to evolve their attack. And it's clear that Farrell is going to be first receiver, often taking it to the line, and Smith will operate as the 12 in that sense, kind of with his eyes up, being able to read the defence, pick a side, and try and pick holes, and he'll. But they, for that to work, they need to win the gain line and they need to win the breakdown. And without Manu Tuilagi, they're hunting for that player. Now, last week, the plan was that, obviously, I mean, Ellis Genge carried really well. Billy carried really well. Lewis Ludlam, when he came on, did that. But they were relying on Joe Cook and Singer to come off his wing and punch some holes last week. And he didn't. He was so quiet. It was unbelievable, really, for a guy of his size. It just didn't influence the game at all. It's not totally his fault, but he just didn't seem to be looking to make things happen. Mm. And then on the back of that, the breakdown was a mess. And so what one of the focuses clearly in this selection and the selection of Underhill, I know Willis is a better turnover winner. And Ludlam is probably a better carrier, but I think the defensive ferocity of Sam Underhill and his ability to clear the breakdown and try and create quicker ball is the factor behind his selection with Tom Curry out of contention with concussion. So they're looking at Porter to try and play the Manu role. Which, you know, and they've looked at, I mean, I went through the list of players who've played at 13 since the last World Cup, and there's like five or six of them with Ollie Lawrence and Slade and Marchant and Daly.
So Porter's the ninth person to start wearing number 13 under Eddie, but yeah, obviously yeah, since the last World Cup there's been five
loads
or six.
Since the World Cup. And so we're in this sort of slightly confusing position where it's probably the right selections for this week, I'd say. But it's not being sold as that. It's being sold as something for down the line. But it's also, we say it's probably the right selections for this week, but it's just yet another change and yet more new players coming in with loads of sort of pressure on them to deliver and save a series. And it's just a confusing narrative, and it can be presented as contradictory. Now, Eddie Jones was at pains to say it is possible to both target a victory on Saturday and build for the World Cup. But overall, the tone was of long-term development. And what was most interesting to me, Will, was that it wasn't just Eddie Jones who was saying that.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like there has been a conversation between the leaders in the group, particularly Courtney Laws, who we spoke to, about this sort of idea of we could take some immediate pain for some long-term gain. And there, it seems to be there has been a slightly a pitch from Eddie, I suppose, to sell that to them, to say, look, guys, we all know that we all want to win every game, but we might need to change some things, try and change the attack, blood some new players, if we want to get to where we think we could get to in 2023. And it seems like there is full buy-in from the players on that front. But I think all of this comes back to this sort of nine-month kind of crusade where Eddie Jones and the RFU have a totally different view of what the England team should be doing than everybody else, almost. Whether that's us in the media or whether that's fans who go to matches or come to Australia, who actually would just like to see England win quite a lot. And at the moment, the current record since 2021 is 9 wins from 16. And those wins include the USA, Canada, Tonga. They've got Australia and South Africa in there, which were decent results. But there's an Italy in there as well. Two Italys, actually. So the results aren't there. And I think if Eddie Jones was tinkering and tweaking the side, having had a bank of wins behind him, everyone would be a bit more on message and on page with it. But I feel like there's just this disconnect between what England and the RFU think is the right thing to do and everyone else just going, why can't England just win on the weekend? And clearly they're trying to do both and they don't want to lose matches. But this constant sort of churn of selection and different people coming in and out all the time and trying to talk about 23 and the World Cup, it's this constant phrase that we keep using, jam tomorrow. It'll be right on the night. And essentially saying that there are three games every 4 years that really matter. The World Cup quarterfinal, the World Cup semi-final and the World Cup final. But I suppose the point we're trying to make is, but what if you don't get there? What if you get a red card in a World Cup quarterfinal in the first minute? What happens if you get refereed off the park? It's just all these intangibles and setting it up for this long distant event in the future and saying that everything before it doesn't really matter because it's this long process of development is just, it's unpalatable for lots of fans, I'd say.
Yeah, it's trying to justify underperformance with the promise of delivering in three games at a World Cup every 4 years. And that's really been the narrative of England of late. And Courtney Laws was kind of urging fans to stay patient and to stay with them, and that England are trying their best, but they're trying to evolve and they're trying to grow and they're trying to develop this attacking system that we hear about. But then you feel, well, how can that be helped by the constant chopping and changing? That's kind of where England are this week, and it's a funny one, and it's caught us a bit by surprise because it wasn't the sort of narrative that I expected at all. And it's, I wouldn't say it's defeatist quite, but it's very kind of downbeat. Mm. This idea that they're sort of, as long as they perform well, then that's, they'll take that, and they believe that if they perform well, then that should deliver the results. But it feels like it's kind of they're limiting their ambitions this week.
It's a fascinating thing, isn't it? Because before last Saturday, England had beaten Australia 8 times in a row. And now they're talking about, oh, well, you know, if we perform all right, then that's enough for us. And you think, this isn't the Eddie's 2016 team. This isn't the narrative of that, which was don't care about anything else, just go and smash the Wallabies up.
I mean, yeah, my I guess we've waffled on here for, 15 minutes, but I guess if I was to sum it up, I think that Eddie is, his strategy, his plan, is to have a look at all the players that he likes, give him a bit of a taste of it between now and the period that he really is looking forward to, the one period that he really thinks he can make a difference, which is the three-month World Cup training camp next summer. He doesn't really feel he can influence a huge amount with these players in a tour even, or in a training camp, or in a Six Nations, because so much of that time is spent trying to get them back on the same page, 13 different clubs. We know that Eddie doesn't like the English club system. Where he feels he can make the biggest gains is in this World Cup training camp. And it felt really today, listening to him talk and looking at this team selection, like, you know, he's dropped in another couple of players who, like I say, I actually don't, I don't hate that selection at all. But just in the wider context, feels like he's just checking out all these players so that he can bring in a squad of 55 into a three-month training camp, as he did in 2019, and that's where he will try and forge his team. And everything for him is built around that. You know, winning the World Cup as a head coach, having lost two finals, is the one trophy, major international trophy, that he hasn't yet secured.
What a luxury, eh? You're only judged on 3 games every 4 years. Mm. It's great, isn't it? I mean, that's the kind of nutshell thing, isn't it? That it's, for these big head coaches, super coaches around the world, making it all about something that only happens every 4 years is a benefit to them, because then it gives them more time to sort of come up with this grand plan.
By the way, we should say, we're not assuming they're going to lose on Saturday.
No, like, and actually, if they win, then you suddenly look at it in a totally different context, don't you? You say, oh, well, blooded young players, and even got the result and turn around the series. And then the next week's selection is really interesting, because then it's like, right, do you park the development thing for a week and just say 2-1 and coming home with a 2-1 is an amazing result?
Mm. Yeah, and I, you look at the Wallabies, who named their team today, and they had all that injury disruption in the first test. They've had more injury disruption during the week, losing two more players, Andrew Kellaway and Len
Ikitau,
thank you, Will. They've both gone, but they are boosted by Taniela Tupou arriving back in the front row, and his battle with Ellis Genge will be worth the entry fee. It'd be, that'll be pretty tasty.
We should say, Times readers might have seen the interview that's gone up already, that he was quite fun. For us, it was this morning, Thursday morning, he was talking to us and talking in a quite amusing way about how he wants to smash up Ellis Genge, and he's going to try and do the same to me. And so that, as you said, that's worth your $20,
isn't
it?
Like I say, I'm not writing off England's chance of winning this game at all, because I kind of, those two selections, he's gone 6-2 on the bench. They're just going to, Jack Willis is there, Lewis Ludlam's there, Ollie Chessam's there. You know, they are, England are going to go physical. And although they've lost the sort of midfield guile of March, and they do have Tommy Freeman, who brings gas, and Porter, who's, you know, he's been very, very good for Leicester this season. It's more just that it feels like a massive game to everyone else, and yet the vibe coming out of Courtney Laws and Eddie Jones today was much more, well, you know, we'd love to win, of course he would, but there are bigger things at stake. And I think you'll just find lots of England rugby fans would rather they won this series and worried about the World Cup next year.
Yeah, I was going to say, tongue-in-cheek, but I hope everyone's going to tune in at 5 to 11 and watch it on the telly for the practice match, because it's not the series decider. It's not going to be 1-1 or 2-0. It's the practice match for the World Cup. So make sure you get your subscription to Sky Sports and get the practice match on the telly. The
Barbarians game was a practice match for this tour.
That didn't go well, did it?
World Cup,
so. But anyway, that has been our sort of snap verdict on the team. And if it sounds like we're slightly discombobulated, it's probably because we are.
Yeah.
But we're trying to make sense of it in the paper, on Friday's paper. So read that, and then we'll have all the previews and everything else and reaction the other side of the game too. But for now, we need to go off and actually write some more stuff for the newspaper. So that's it from the Brisbane studios. And the next time you'll hear us, you'll be in Sydney, I think, for the third one.
I will.
There we go. Right, see you all later. Cheers.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh,
no, how would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.